get to see people grow up as a little girl and with kids, you know, Sunday school and Vacation Bible School. And then later in life, God brings a young man into the church. And he's on a long journey. And they meet. And I remember Mark saying to me several years ago, how do you date a Christian girl? He'll fill in that part of the story, his journey to end up marrying Jennifer. But Mark's been on a journey. A long journey since he's been born, and so good to have family here today to be with him. Several years ago, we started a thing called Here's My Life, and I asked three people during the year to share their story, their journey of coming to Jesus, and what he's doing in their life now. And this morning, we are blessed. Mark Trafter is going to come and share Here's My Life. Mark?
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
God is good.
All the time.
Song Kim sang, I just want to thank her for singing that. The song that really. I just want to thank Pastor for giving me the opportunity to stand up here today and share my story and my journey with you guys. As most stories go, mine started the day I was born. It's January 19th, 1981. I was born to my dad, Ed, and my mom, Beth. Both who, by the grace of God, are here today. My dad struggled with a heart attack several years ago that almost took him from us. And as many of you know, my mom struggled with bladder cancer just last year. But through the grace of God, he pulled them through so that I didn't have to live with them yet. I'm one of five siblings. Many of you may not know that. I have an older sister who lives in Switzerland. I have a younger sister, and I have two younger brothers, both of also which are here today. It's a little complicated to explain, but put it plainly, at one point, I was both the youngest and the oldest at the same time. I grew up for most of my childhood, my teenage years, in a small town in central New Jersey called Metuchen. It's a little town, 2 square miles big, right smack in the middle of Edison. It was a stereotypical small town for its time. Everybody knew everybody. There was a mom and pop hardware store right in town, a couple of churches, a center of town gas station. Just a stereotypical small town that you might see on TV. My dad had his own business at the time, which he still does now. The business was thriving and growing when I was really young. We had a nice house in town, nice property. Good neighborhood. I attended a small school that was also attached to the church that we went to. It was Metuchen Christian Academy. To be honest, I grew up a pretty sheltered life at that point. Something I really didn't realize until later on. But just as sometimes it does, life happened. And tragedy struck our family. My younger sister was born much earlier than she should have been. And shortly after her first birthday, she died. Although I was just 3 at the time, I do remember quite a bit about her and about her short life. From what I remember, it wasn't long after that that the situation started to weigh on my parents. Over the course of the next several years, my parents' relationship began to deteriorate. And my dad moved out when I was 7. In those years, my older sister, still living in the States, just finishing up high school and going to college herself. She became my rock. She'd be the one that I would turn to. She would be the one that would comfort me if there was fights or just when I didn't quite understand, when things just became so overwhelming. She would take me on adventures to magical kingdoms in a faraway place to accomplish amazing quests, all just in the woods behind my house. She taught me how to use my imagination. She taught me that life would be what I needed, and that my circumstances wouldn't define it. But as my parents were finalizing their divorce, she was leaving for Colorado for college, and my rock was gone. Things were tough as I tried to transition at that point. I wasn't really old enough to comprehend everything that was going on, but I was old enough to feel and know the change, that there was changes. As I stated earlier, I attended a small Christian school. I attended from 3 years old in pre-K until about fifth grade. And that's where I started to learn about Jesus. It's also where I was when I prayed for salvation for the first time. It stayed a constant, even as the rest of my little world began to turn upside down. When I was eight, my mom met a man that would later become the most important and influential man in my life. Note that I said later, because sadly it wasn't always that way. I was a trying child, to say the least. And as a kid, I had ear-length blonde hair and blue eyes, closely resembling Dennis the Menace. Not just in looks, but antics as well. I wasn't a bad kid. I was just too curious and too adventurous for my own good times. Transition in my life, coupled with my limited and childlike comprehension of what was happening within my close family dynamic, had me feeling very confused and oftentimes feeling very alone. I lashed out, and unfortunately my stepdad Hank became the target. But God bless him, because even after all that, he still chose to marry my mom and never stopped loving me. You could say that I'm blessed and that God knew what he was doing, because he knew that I needed three parents in my life. I was 10 when my mom and Hank got married. Shortly after that, news came that I'd be a big brother again. It was exciting, and I couldn't wait. However, overshadowing just a bit, news also came that we would be moving from my hometown. And that hit pretty hard. A place, in my perspective as a child, may have well been across the country, but we only moved to Freeland. At that point, I was pretty sheltered, as I said earlier, from the real world, the racism and racial tensions of that time period, bullying, fighting, sex, drugs, were never really a reality for me at that point. And I was moving to a place where all of that was in your face on a daily basis, even for a 10-year-old. Being a scrawny kid, naive to the world, who used his imagination to play, didn't help my popularity department. Didn't help me in my popularity department. Transition was tougher yet. New house, new neighborhood, new school, and a new family. And I struggled with that. At 11, a family friend began to become someone I could talk to, someone I could find comfort in. In my vulnerability, took advantage of me and sexually molested me. My longing to fit in, for acceptance, for love, to be one of the cool kids in school, because That's what they would always talk about doing. Help me to justify what that 23-year-old woman was doing. That it was okay that she did that. She loved me. She'd take care of me. And from that point, I would continue to see sex as an association of love. And it would fuel promiscuous lifestyles in the world. After some internal family issues, my time in field had ended. And I was 12, halfway through my 6th grade year. My parents had decided it would be in my best interest that I move back to Metuchen and live with my dad, bring me back to where my comfort zone was. I remember it being a very bittersweet event. I didn't want to be away from my mom and what at that time had become 2 younger brothers. I wanted to be the older brother that I didn't have a chance to be. However, I was happy to be where I thought of as going home. At the start, my dad and I were living in my dad's shop. We didn't have a house, we didn't have much. But my dad tried to make the most out of what we did. He had built a room for me on the second storage area of the shop. So that would be a home. Turned his office into a living room. We turned the shower area into a regular bathroom. So instead of technicians getting washed up in the shower, it would be a place where I could get ready for the day, and into a sort of kitchen area. A year later, I met what would become my first love, and that was football. Football had given me a new hope. It was the idea of being part of a team, a family that I had just been searching for, camaraderie. However, that hope had quickly deflated when the veteran players decided they didn't like it. I was still small and scrawny, more like the kid wrapped in bubble wrap in Little Giants than Lawrence Taylor. But as I learned the game, I realized I wasn't too bad at it. However, being good at that game just further fueled my teammates' disdain for me. Throughout those years in middle school, my grades came up. Even through the trying times with football, I still tried my best and became an outlet. Became a refuge for me. In 95, I graduated 8th grade. I was accepted to Bishop R. High School as a Catholic school that you had to test to get into. And it was a new start again. It was a new chapter. Most of all, they had a good football program. As I said, football became life. I ate, drank, and slept football at that time. It was an escape from the argument, from a rough home life at the time. My dad and I just didn't see eye to eye very often. However, it wasn't without love and support that he tried to do what was best for me. At this time, we had moved out of the shop and into a house in Metuchen. As I said, things in the house, as much as a new page it was supposed to be, things just continued to get worse. The arguments got more heated and more hurtful. And through the things that my parents had been through together, it continued to get worse as well. Just feeling an already bad and vulnerable situation. My freshman and sophomore years of high school went on pretty eventful. My junior year, I was contacted by Landreth University in Tennessee. They wanted me to come and play football there. Free of charge. It was finally my way out of the budget. It was my way out of everything I've been dealing with. However, the teammates that I had in that school as well, for whatever reason, were not very happy when I received the call. It caused a lot of bullying. A lot of what was supposed to be a happy time to be a really, really tough time. But in the waning moments, in the second game of my junior season, I broke my left arm. Pins and screws would be needed to repair it. As a result of that surgery, I lost all use of my left hand and wrist. And there was no definitive answer on if it would ever return. 6 months of rehab later, and slowly, I gained the strength and use back in the hand. I did my best to relearn how to do different things with it. Amazing how you take body parts for granted until you no longer have them. I learned to tie my shoes with one hand. I learned how to light a match, light a cigarette with one hand. I learned so many things that I thought were kind of cool. Shortly after that, though, just a matter of weeks, I would break the same arm a second time. Same bone. However, this time a cast and some time on all that was needed. In August of 1998, after 3 years of bullying right before my senior year, constant torment from the people I called teammates and family, I decided my time in Bishop R was over. And in my senior year, I transferred to Metuchen High School. I was ready to move on to Lambeth after that. However, that wasn't the last plan. And again, the second game, my senior season this time. Just a week away from exactly 1 year from the first break, my arm broke for the third and final time. It shattered. The doctor had said when he went in, it looked like a grenade got off of my arm. More plates, more screws, and now even cadaver bone would be needed to repair it. With that, the news came that I would never play football again. And shortly after, Lambeth University rescinded the offer they had given me. The time my life took a nosedive. I wasn't sure what else I had left. I wasn't a real good student in high school. I pretty much counted on football to carry me through. There was even times that certain teachers would pass me simply because I had a future in football. And it was in that time of the last part of my senior year that drugs became a new comfort for me. It was a release. It was a way to get away. I didn't have to feel it anymore. And as I said earlier, sex became the way I felt love. Promiscuity. Going from relationship to relationship. Just hoping that in some way I'd find someone that can give me some type of grounding. My rebellious nature didn't help mine and my dad's relationship. Nor did it help mine and my mom or my stepdad's relationship either. Arguing became daily. Fights just became indescribable. I found a friendship and acceptance with the drug dealers, the troublemakers, those that would wander around at night and just do whatever they felt that would make them feel better. However, once again, it seemed like with following, I found myself the target of other people at school. However, this time I was 18, just finishing my senior year, and they were 16 and 17, technically minors. So I spent most of my time running away from it. I spent most of my time terrified to go to school because I just didn't want to end up in another fight. I didn't want to end up beaten up and bullied. So the drinking, the drugs got worse. It continued. I was on a fast track to either jail or death. And unfortunately, I was welcoming death more than anything else. However, as God's hand has lived through my life, in May of 1999, I was told that I'd be a dad. In the December of that year, my daughter Brianna was born. I remember the news, it hit like a ton of bricks. I wasn't sure if I'd be a good dad. I wasn't sure if it was even possible for me to be a dad. I wish I could tell you at that moment, I turned my life around. And I stopped doing all the dangerous things that I was doing. And for a time I did. For as I've told Brianna several times, in that moment, she saved my life. However, my search and my longing for acceptance, for love, continued. I wasn't with Brianna's mom, and we lived in two different houses. And as that was better for her as a little girl, she needed to be with her mom. So the life that I had built in my head of this baby, of the one that would love me unconditionally, no matter what, wasn't exactly the way that I thought it would be. Following year, I would lose what I considered my closest friend to suicide. And just a couple years later, another close friend to suicide. Oftentimes, I felt that I should go the same route. Oftentimes, I tried to convince myself that it would be easier that way. I wouldn't be a burden. But again, God had different plans for my life. Over the next several years, I would bounce back and forth between my mom and my dad's house, never really feeling at home in either place. My relationship with Brianna's mom had become hostile and unhealthy. We both seemed to want the best for our daughter, just two different directions. And we adamantly argued our case to each other. It never got physical, but verbally and emotionally and mentally, it was abusive on both sides, causing constant court battles, constant temporary restraining orders. However, over the course of that, at times I felt myself at church I had grown up in. I never didn't believe in Christ. I never didn't believe in the power of what Jesus could do. I just simply believed it wasn't something that I deserved. 2006, I moved to South Jersey to live with my dad again. In 2008, my daily use of drugs and my daily need of painkillers became a reality. When I mean my daily need, I'm talking about 90 painkillers in less than a week. Cocaine, meth, and pretty much anything else that I could get my hands on. And with the painkillers, it was justified because I had a doctor's prescription, so it couldn't be bad. It couldn't be wrong. The doctor said it was okay. That time, things came to a head with me and Brianna's mom. In 2010, I had seen my daughter for the very last time. For 3.5 years. My world had crumbled. I took more painkillers because they helped me focus to go through court battles, and they helped me not feel the pain of losing her. I thought of my daughter hating me and despising me and wanting nothing to do with me. Something that the enemy had convinced me of. And over the next 3 years, I sank deeper and deeper into an addiction. In 2012, I had gotten engaged. She was a good girl from a good stable family in Philadelphia. In April of 2013, we had gotten an apartment in Northwest Philly, Northeast Philly together. This time, the painkillers, the opiates, had become a focus of my existence. I would get up in the morning for work, drive the train, and I would choke the painkillers down because I was too busy crying that I was going to die this time. I was praying that somehow through the mess that I made my life, that something could be salvaged. But on August 7th, I could no longer take it. I went on a 3-day binge of OxyContin, Xanax, Valium, cocaine, meth, and marijuana. At the peak of it, for those that may know, I took 6 OxyContin 40s over the course of my day. A few grams of cocaine, an unknown amount of meth. But at that point, I just didn't care. All I cared about was the numb feeling that I got inside. That wouldn't make me deal with anything that I was going to need. My way of thinking was, well, I accept the fact that I'm going to hell. I became okay with that thought. As long as whatever I did with my life kept those I love away from that place. Earlier in 2013, just before that August time, in South Carolina, my younger brother's new school graduation, things with my mom come to a head. After terrible words and worse actions, my mom, my brothers, and my stepdad had had enough of my ridiculousness. And they had decided to break communication with me. So as I sat there, the day after that peak of binging, I can't really tell you what happened between that day and 2 days later, because I just simply don't remember. But I found myself sitting in my car in front of my apartment, with a survival knife in one hand. It was finally time that I just couldn't come on anymore. And I would follow in the footsteps of my 2 previous friends. I wasn't sure whether to share this part to how graphic it can be. But I feel like it may be necessary. I remember thinking, how am I supposed to get married and not dance with my mom? But how am I supposed to get married and not have my daughter be there? Not have my brothers as my best man? It just didn't make sense to me. but I didn't see it change in any other way. So as I sat there and I built up what I thought was courage, I put that knife to my wrist, and I cut as hard as I possibly could. And God said, no. If anyone's ever cut themselves, you know how it feels when the skin separates. And I felt it. I felt the blood. However, as I looked down at my wrist, there was nothing more than a scratch. Yet me, forever defiant, I just screamed and yelled and told God that he had no right to save my life. He had no right to keep me on this earth. It was none of his business, and he needed to stay out of it. So I tried again and again and again, and yet the knife stayed dull. With rage, I left the car and went into my apartment. I threw that knife to the side. As I did, it just caught my thumb, and it split open like stuck pig. There was not even resistance. And I took it as God making fun of me. That I could have let you do it, but I'm going to make you suffer a little more. In the next couple days, we're still kind of a blur. However, that Saturday night, I woke up to my fiance at the time. I put the ring on the table and told me that I needed to be out by Monday. So Sunday morning at about 1 a.m., I called my dad, not knowing what I was going to do next. His suggestion was, why don't I join him at church the next day? And I could say that was the last thing that I was going to do. So that morning, Sunday, after falling asleep and waking up, I decided that I was going to finish the job that God wouldn't let me do the night before. On my way to the Wawa around the corner from my house, I went to get a cup of coffee so that I could go ahead and write some letters and finish it. On the way there, the Spirit took hold of me. And I began to weep. And I found myself back in my apartment, getting changed, and on my way to ERC. I had no idea how to get here, and I was trying too hard to try and follow a GPS. So, I winged it. I found myself pulling in, and on the side of I sat in the second row, second seat, and I cried for 2 hours. And I begged the Lord to just forgive me. I realized all at once that I had become Judas. I had become the Roman soldier that nailed the nail to his wrist. And throughout my life, his sacrifice just wasn't enough. And in that moment of sitting here at ERC, I'll be honest, sorry, Pastor, but I can't even tell you what he said that day. I realized that he had reached down and he had pulled me out of the place that I dug for myself. I didn't realize the journey that God was starting that day. And after some adjustment and time to learn who Jesus truly was and find out what a relationship with him meant, that he was my best friend, that he was my shelter in the storm, and that he was my eternal rock that wasn't going to leave, that wasn't going to turn his back, that wasn't going to move to Colorado or commit suicide, but someone that I can stand firm on all. About 3 months, I had noticed a young girl playing the keyboard. I thought for sure she was married. There was no way. Matt Cadison informed me that she was not. I introduced myself one Sunday morning, a little too scared to ask for anything more than an introduction. And a short time later, we had started a relationship. Over the course of the next few months, I had found myself faced with a decision to go to Keswick, a Christian rehab center. And I thought in my head, this girl that I just met, now I'm going to go to rehab. And she stuck by me. So much that she took the ride with us to drop me off. While making that decision to go, though, for the first time in my life, I felt the Lord speak to me. I figured while I was in a good place, and maybe I didn't need it anymore. And I was doing the dishes at my dad's house in Wilmerton, and contemplating back and forth whether to put the application in. I felt the Lord tell me, Mark, I gave you 32 years to do whatever you want with your life. But the rest is mine. And with that, I made the decision to go. I spent 9 days in Keswick. The love and the support that I had received here at ERC, they had felt had gotten me through the withdrawal phase of the addiction and had set me on the right path with Christ. I was going to small groups and trying to get involved. And they sent me home. So I came back to ERC and I had settled into the tech team. The main person, the purpose of trying to get closer to Jennifer. However, God had a joke planned for me that at the time, Jen worked late on Thursday nights and never came to music practice. So I got to know her dad a lot better. February of 2014, I had reached out to Aaron Brianna's mom. And I believe it was February of that year, I was reunited with my daughter. A moment I never thought would come, even after I knew it changed my life around. But God promises restoration. And that's what he did. And now me and Brianna have a stronger relationship than I ever could have thought possible.
Amen.
Not only restoration for me, but the restoration in my parents. I now have a wonderful opportunity of having all three of my parents over on holidays and for events. I watch my parents hug and tell each other that they love each other. As I said, all three of my parents. It's a moment that I had begged for as a kid that, again, God restores. His promises are true. Here at ERC, I've grown to be able to be a part of Stephen Ministry and help people go through maybe some of the events that I went through. My desire of wanting to work with kids, God has answered the prayer by allowing me to be one of four youth leaders here at the church. And this year is the first year that I'm able to serve as a deacon. I'm excited to see what God still has planned in my life. Because I know it's not over. I know that he's just getting started. And that girl that I had met, as Pastor said earlier, did become my wife last September. So this life that was broken and battered, that I had done, just as the popular song said, everything I could to undo me. But it was his love that pursued me. So sort of wrap up. This is my life. But again, it's not finished. Because my brother Jeff is going to come up and sing, "This is where mercy found." Thank you.